Ray. We've opened a work session on that, and let's talk about what the dash whatever amendments achieve on that bill.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the dash two amendments combine the dash one amendments, which you received last, that changed the word excluding to excludes within the measure. The practical effect of the dash two amendments is they remove wolves, which are protected under the Endangered Species Act, from the measure, therefore naming only wolf hybrids within the measure. So as putting into the predatory animal statute, it would be wolf hybrids and not wolves.
Okay. Thank you, Ray. Glenn, can you come forward and tell us why you've made this particular change, if you would, please? Since this is a bill brought forward on your behalf by Representative Smith, Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Glenn Stonebrink with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. We had a slight disagreement, a bone of contention, if you will. We did not believe the bill originally with the word wolves was in conflict with federal law. All we were attempting to do is to remove one more government that would be after us if, in fact, someone were to shoot a wolf. We knew we still had to deal with federal law.
Yes.
Based upon the testimony given by the governor's office last evening, where they said it would be in direct conflict, and of course they have the privilege of the Department of Justice to help them with this, we simply wanted to remove that obstacle by removing the, because we're trying to deal with two things, Mr. Chairman, both with wolves and wolf hybrids.
Right.
There are 20,000, Katie came from our office today, found out there are 20,000 wolf hybrids out and about among us. These are not something that were brought in as an experimental species from another country or another state or whatever. These are something that people have either bred and then allowed to be, get into the wilds or accidentally or on purpose. So we're trying to remove that obstacle of being in direct conflict with the federal Endangered Species Act.
So
that's what that amendment would do.
What the dash two amendment does.
The word wolf will be out. The word wolf hybrids remains.
Okay. And did that satisfy the governor's office?
I thought, Mr. Chairman, on its face it did, because the only objection they had was with wolves, not wolf hybrids. Okay. And we researched again the Federal Endangered Species Act, since Representative Ackerman asked about that. And it does not cover a hybrid.
Wolf hybrid.
It has to be, because that's an intervention with man, and that's not what the Endangered Species Act is trying to protect.
I agree with that, Mr. Chair. I raised that issue, and my sources tell me the same.
Okay. Any additional questions of Glenn while we have him here? All right. Thank you, Glenn. Appreciate it. Okay, members, we have the dash two amendment. We've had an explanation of it. The chair would entertain a motion to move. Yes, we are.
So moved.
Okay.
The dash three amendment. Dash two amendment to House Bill 3363.
You mean the dash two amendment, Representative?
Two amendments, yes.
Thank you.
That's what I meant. Thank you.
Okay, members, it has moved. House Bill 3363, that we adopt the dash two amendment to the bill. Discussion? Representative Ackerman, you are satisfied that meets the test that you had in the question you had asked previously?
It satisfies my contention as to whether the hybrid wolf was an endangered species. It does not convince me I'm going to vote for the bill.
Understandable, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Any objections to adopting the dash two amendment?
I object.
Okay. Any further objections? Let it so be noted, Representative Ackerman objects to adopting the dash two amendments. Chair would entertain a motion to move the bill. Members, the bill has been moved, and is that with a due pass recommendation?
With a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Members, it has been moved to House Bill 3363 to the House, full House, as amended with the dash two amendments, the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Ackerman.
Yes, I will continue to vote against the bill. I firmly believe that at 200 yards through a telescopic sight, a person's not going to be able to make a distinction between a hybrid wolf and a gray wolf. And what we're providing here is cover for persons to say that they thought it was a hybrid when really it was not. I think we're doing a disservice to a protected species, and just as we're doing a disservice to those people whom we are arming with some excuse to take the gray wolf under, I think, very fictitious circumstances. I'm also concerned, Mr. Chair, that I have not heard or any evidence in this proceeding that the gray wolf has migrated into Oregon or constitutes even a minor threat to our cattle-producing neighbors from in eastern Oregon. There was testimony of one wolf that was a product of a roadkill, but I don't think that indicates, at least to me, that the we have to take this type of action at this time to basically eradicate hybrid wolves and at the same time provide a large margin of error for the taking of gray wolves, which I think is really the intent of the framers of this bill. Remember, they came in exclusively looking for, well, not exclusively, but primarily looking for a means to take the gray wolf, which was known to have been an endangered species. When we brought that point out through testimony that it was a dangerous species, then they backed off. I can't believe they did not know that before they came here. And likewise, Mr. Chair, I don't think the staff reports which were provided to us made that notation. So I think that we're proceeding here with not a full deck. I think we're proceeding erroneously. I think it's bad policy to eradicate species. And I will vote against the bill at this time and vote against it on the House floor.
Thank you, Representative. Appreciate your comments. Representative Doyle.
Thank you, Chair. I guess just to respond a bit to Representative Ackerman's concerns, I think that is the benefit of the Dash 2 amendment and the bill that's actually coming out, is that the fact that that the gray wolf is now not part of this bill and it only goes to the wolf hybrids, that is what deals with the concern of the type of wolf that is in the state of Oregon at this point. Regardless of you know, the fact that some gray wolves may traverse from neighboring states, that at this point, you know, the bill protects those wolves, and the wolf hybrids are the ones that actually, through the testimony was shown, are the ones who are doing the damage, the most significant damage. And I think that it's when those wolf hybrids are causing the attacks, this is exactly what this kind of bill goes to, is to help those individuals who need that protection. And, you know, all the more so that if it turns out there's no gray wolves in our state, then those can be, individuals can be rest assured that if they have to take an animal, that it's going to be a wolf hybrid.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, I kind of listened to both sides of this as much as I could with an open mind, but the question kind of comes to my mind. Even the wolves themselves have been absent basically for Oregon for probably 100 years or more, and we're hear discussions in this committee, in the Salmon Committee, the problems with introduced species and how they affect wildlife, warm water game fish on salmon in the Columbia everywhere, striped bass problems in the Coquille. This animal has been gone for a long time. If you want to bring them back and have their impact, how far are you going to go back and bring other species back? Would you want to see dinosaurs too? I realize that's going clear back, but there are people out there that if they felt they could do that, that's where they'd go. And I think we're past those days.
Thank you, Representative. All right, hearing no further discussion, would the clerk call the roll, please?
Aye.
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 No.
Excused.
No.
Excused.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 3363 is hereby passed as adopted to the full House with a due pass recommendation as amended.
And the chair needs a carrier. The chair will assign Representative Greg Smith.
All right.
All right, we will close the work session on House Bill 3363, and we will call forward Brendan McCarthy from Legislative Council to, as we are still in a work session on House Bill 3571. Brendan, would you, Representative Ackerman has a substantive question in regards to the amendment being appropriate for the relating clause. Could you share your thoughts on that?
Representative Cupp, Representative Ackerman, I understand the question. And if I were drafting this bill to start with, perhaps that is not the most artful relating clause I would choose. However, I believe legally we are okay with that relating clause. By taking out other swans other than trumpeter swans from the game bird definition, that most certainly does relate to the types of birds that may be hunted as game birds, and it also relates to the types of birds that may be hunted under the predatory animal statute. So I do believe that swan hunting is an acceptable relating clause, perhaps not the most apt, but acceptable.
Okay, Representative Ackerman, is that satisfactory for you?
No.
Okay.
But I understand what he's saying.
Okay. I understand.
I appreciate the effort, Mr. Chair. I'm not being discourteous.
No, I understand. And you brought forward an excellent point. Thank you, Brendan. Appreciate that. Brendan McCarthy, Legislative Council. Okay. So we are in the process of adopting the Dash 1 amendments. We were in discussion in regard to that. Do we have further discussion? Hearing none, how many objections do we have to the adopting the Dash 1 amendment?
Is there a motion on the floor for that?
Yes, there was previously when you first asked the question in regards to the Dash 1.
I think I've stated my position.
You did. Okay. Did. All right. Let it so be noted, Representative Ackerman objects. Any further objections? Hearing none, so ordered. The Dash 1 amendment is adopted. The chair would entertain a motion to move the bill as amended.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the House Bill 3571 to the as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, members, House Bill 3571 has been moved to the full House with a due pass recommendation as amended. Discussion. Members, the chair would like to state that the objections to this by Representative Ackerman are well-founded. We understand there's a very narrow interpretation in regards to federal statute in regards to the issuance of a hunting season as opposed to allowing take. And I think that that is a substantive question that could be ascertained at a later date in terms of federal law. And that is one of the reasons we've, and I'm co-sponsor of this bill with Representative Zahner, that we've chosen to go forward. We think that's a narrow area that ought to be explored, and we think this is an appropriate method of going forward to accomplish that with the federal government. So with that, would the clerk call the roll?
Aye.
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 No.
Excused.
No.
No.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 3571 is hereby passed to the full House as amended with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Zahner, would you be so kind as to do the honors? All right. Thank you very much. We're going to close the work session on House Bill 3571. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3924, which is brought forward by our very own representative, Vice Chair Nelson. And Ray, would you tell us a little bit about this, what this is about, while Vice Chair Nelson goes forward to the dais?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me. We are opening a public hearing on this bill at this time. Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3924 modifies criteria for farm stand allowed in exclusive farm use zones. current law allows farm stands in exclusive farm use zones, or EFUs. The sales from the stand makes up no more than 25% of the total sales of the farm stand, and the stands do not include structures for banquets, public gatherings, or public entertainment. House Bill 3924 removes these restrictions and allows for promotion of agricultural activities as an allowable use of the farm stand within an EFU. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ray. Representative Nelson, great to see you again in front of us. And if you would, for the record, state your name and tell us what this bill is all about.
Thank you, Chairman Krupp. Donna Nelson, a representative from District 29 in Yamhill County of Oregon. Chairman Krupp and members of this House Committee on Agriculture and Forestry, on behalf of the many Oregon citizens whose livelihood and that of their families depends upon the agricultural industry, I express my appreciation for this opportunity you've given me today. I'm here today as the sponsor of House Bill 3924, a bill that minimally modifies the criteria for a farm stand allowed in an exclusive farm use zone. The purpose of this bill is to provide farmers an opportunity to adequately promote their farm products in this present time when our farmers are absolutely scraping the bottom of the barrel in efforts to stay alive. Due to our free trade agreements, the unfair competition from international sources, and other detrimental impacts of governance and regulations, our farmers are having to turn to creative ventures in order to sell their produce. The basic truth is that our agricultural industry is most likely the only industry in our great Oregon that does not have equal rights to use its width to market and promote its products for sale like other industry. Even our newest wine industry, which we just heard about, has greater freedom next door. That is why today we are asking on behalf of our farming community, our friends, our relatives, for the relaxation of stringent laws that restrict their being able to promote their products for immediate sales in order to sustain their investment in our well-being and in their land and their occupation. Our hardworking farmers, the epitome of the strongest work ethic, need our assistance now. If we do not support their endeavors to a greater degree than we have previously, we, as well as they, lose. There will be no need for a farm bureau or supportive vendors. Farming will simply disappear. We're not asking for a massive change in exclusive farm use zoning. We're only asking for an opportunity in this land, this state of opportunity, to make a living through creative marketing strategies and techniques so the public will be drawn to our products, and products that are not selling will sell. There's often no gain without pain, and our farmers have suffered enough. We want their future to be gain, not loss, and success, not failure, and the future's now. And I thank you for your consideration and for your advocacy for our state of Oregon farmers. If you will turn to the accompanying attachment, I brought this bill today on behalf of a young man by the name of John Bernard, who you see pictured and recently featured in our local newspaper. This family is a century family. I don't know, there's 17 or 19 children in this family. They have had an incredible work ethic and are seeking to continue to make a living so that they can pass on their farms to their children. In the meantime, they need sustenance. So if you wouldn't mind, please, would you mind to turn to the email, and you'll see why Mr. Bernard is not here today. It's this page of paper preceding the newspaper story, and this is from his wife and him. Donna, Mary Beth Bernard, John's wife, writes, "His family, the Bernards, have been farming since the mid-1800s in Oregon. There's been a variety of grains, turkeys, corn, beans, specialty seeds. Now, with farming, the way it is, you need to either get bigger if you want to continue farming or become very intensified in a specific field. John, as well as his brothers, were selling turkeys to Norbest before the processing plant in Salem went bankrupt. Thus, no more turkeys. That, of course, hurt. Not far behind was the bankruptcy of AgriPac, whom they were selling their corn and beans to. John has not raised wheat for the price of it for a couple of years or so. So they are just using it for rotation in the field for the stand, a farm stand for produce. She says, we've also been sitting on some vetch seed and grass seed for a year now because it was cheaper for the people we would have normally sold it to, and they would have sold to buy it from other countries, such as Hungary, through the free trade agreement, a lot cheaper than it can be bought from U.S. farmers. I don't know his brother's exact position, she says, but I know they are hurting as well and would very much support this bill. She says, we can't get any bigger, so we have to get more intensified. We've decided this intensification will come in the form of a produce stand. Our plans are to market our 220 acres through the stand directly to the public. Of course, in order to do this successfully, she says, we need a lot of assistance from our state and county officials. What we've learned in the past 4 years, or last 4 years we've done this, the public wants something that will draw them to the farm besides only vegetables that we ourselves are growing. This can be a corn maze, farm animals to pet, jams, jellies, a place to have a picnic, a birthday party for the kids. She explains, do you know that if we put a goat in its pen with a walkway, a ramp in it, that it has now become public entertainment in Yamhill County, and they can't do it because by law in statute 283 they're restricted from a category called public entertainment for which there is no definition in statute. We can just have a goat sitting in a pen, but they can't have a ramp up to it or a walkway up to it. How do we express how much we like this bill? She says, we really, really like it and hope it passes. I hope we've given you enough information for you to pick from to use. John sees a stand as the only way for the farm to remain in the family for his kids. There's not a single crop making any money to continue farming the traditional way. You have our full support, and John wishes he could be there in person, but he's trying to get some planning done for the stand before this next predicted rain starts this afternoon and evening. With all our best wishes for success today, John and Mary Beth Bernard. And if you just briefly turn to this article, I know you want to read it at your leisure, but you know, when you look at this, it's what is happening, you know, to our farmers. You know, you're going to see just like in this situation, when frozen foods shuts down, that's really going to impact others. And when its predecessor, Co-op AgriPac, went bankrupt, you know, this same John Bernard lost $236,000 in equity with a packer. So, you know, instead of selling sweet corn and beans now to AgriPac and AgriFrozen, he's taking his product directly to consumers. We need to let these farmers have this right to market their farm stands and do so, you know, with creativity and using their own wits, because we do in every other industry. Our wine industry, it sells at promoting their product in this very same way, from the winery and at the winery itself with banquets and promotions and entertainment. And these farmers simply want to have, you know, some type of draw to the public. And it doesn't come from just having a field out there of corn. So I invite you all to McMinnville to see Farmer John's stand. I invite you just on the other side of McMinnville to another location where we have a similar situation. So what we're asking is for just, three little changes in this law. We're not asking for a change of exclusive farm use. In fact, we, zoning, I mean, we believe in it. I mean, we want to preserve our farmland. We just want a correction, the right to promote, and the right to define public entertainment in a way that allows these farmers.
Representative, I think we have some questions here. Representative Krieger.
Promote the product.
Mr. Chair, you know, to use Representative Nelson's words, I want you to know how proud we are of you to bring this bill forward. And I'm not saying that with disrespect because you use that phrase. I think truly it is something that's needed. Land use for us who live in rural Oregon has gone to the point of lunacy, absolute lunacy. That's why you see Measure 7, and that's why you see discontent. And it's, we're going to win the war. They may win a battle here and there, but we're going to win the war.
Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Smith.
Well, Representative Krieger kind of beat me to the punch, but I want to say I appreciate this very much. Coming from House District 28, we're highly agrarian. We suffer from the same problems with farmers' situations as you do. And I'm highly supportive of this. That's very thoughtful, and let's go forward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, thank you so very much. Any other question?
Question, Mr. Chair.
I might have
a question while the chair is busy. I also think this is, that we've got a, you know, a good bill here. I appreciate you bringing it forward. I do have a question, though, because it's a very simple, straightforward bill. And it basically just adds promotions. And I think that that's appropriate. And I think that the windmill that was used in news articles is a good example of a good idea for promotion. And it's certainly been connected to the farm. My question really kind of relates to, you know, sideboards. Promotion can go anything from, from the goat, next to the stand to Disneyland. And I'm sure you're not planning on Disneyland on, a little farm on a, country farm road. But, the word and promotion is subject to pretty broad interpretation. And I'm not saying I have any answer or a concept here. I'm just wondering, how we can judge some kind of context or scale. I don't think we're looking to establish a parking lot on the farm that, can take on 500 cars or, some enterprise that supports that. And I could see that, I see a letter here from, maybe 1,000 friends and LCDC is going to testify. And, I think they're going to want to know about scope. So you got any thoughts about, size, scale, or what we might call sideboards?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Vice Chair King. In discussing this issue with the Farm Bureau and Mr. Schellenberg, there are various ways in which we could, define that. What I think most clearly needs to be stated is that the effect of this change is in no way to diminish the size of farmland. I mean, somewhere in here, if that's made clear, so that this means that no, the purpose is not commercial construction that will take away from farmland, because as farmers, we need our farmland to produce. So I don't know if there is a dimensional area for a farm stand that's needed. I don't know if we talked about a possibility when we talked about products that weren't farm-related products. And I use the example of what is okay and what isn't okay. We're restricted now by statute to 25, percent of sales that could be commercial soaps or flowers or something else. But basically, if you use it as a gimmick, let's say you have a scale and you want to sell 10 pounds of corn, so if you get a bathroom scale and pile 10 pounds of corn on it and sell a package, you ought to be able to do it. I mean, if you have a goat and you need a, the kids should pet the goat. I mean, it's just practical common sense that you, need a walkway up there that's safe and there's no liability for the farm owner. So all I'm saying from that is that there needs to be some basic simplicity to practical common sense, not turning exclusive farmland into a huge commercial venture. That's not. We don't want to lose farmland. We don't want to change exclusive farm use zone. We just want it to be practical and afford these farmers the right to make a nickel from it. Or there's not going to be a need for any, and the state's going to own it all, and we'll put prisons on it all.
So Representative, you're not advocating we build Knott's Berry Farms out here.
We are not building Knott's Berry Farm, but that is
It sounds like you're just asking for some common sense.
To promote their products, farm products, at least in the same certain way that we allow our wineries.
And it seems like that's consistent with what the governor's trying to encourage in terms of value-added, you know, brand Oregon, those types of things. And I might make notice, members, it was interesting in the material that Representative Nelson provided us. It talks about AgriFrozen, the company that has gone out of production. You realize they're taking 60,000 acres of corn and 20,000 acres of green beans and several thousand acres of peas in eastern Oregon out of production. Now, that's 80,000 acres in the Willamette Valley. It's a lot of land.
Right.
And you know what's going to go in its place? Grass seed. Because that's the only thing left to make money with, and for not much longer.
Representative Krepp, I don't enjoy eating grass seed.
Well, thank you, Representative Smith. I must concur.
Well,
look what he grew into.
So I would say that I think Representative Nelson has come up with a great concept in that we need to look at how we can allow farmers in appropriate areas, and by appropriate areas I mean places of high visibility where they have the opportunity to put a farm stand and expect a reasonable amount of income off of that. I think we need to do this in light of what's happening, the foreign competition. I might remind the members of this committee that in a couple of weeks we're going to be having a hearing on NAFTA and GATT issues and how they have impacted us in Oregon agriculture and how they may impact other industries related to this, natural resources. So I encourage all of us to consider going in this direction. Representative King.
I have a question, too.
Okay. All right. Benedict, you were talking before I broke in, so why don't you continue on, and then we'll go right on.
Well, I think that, you know, as a follow-up to this, that, you know, something that could be regarded as promotion, for example, is the petting zoo, et cetera. But I think really the farming experience, learning about farming, is part of farming and is part of their marketable product mix. And so I regard that, you know, coming out to see the different animals is not just a promotional gimmick, but it's also actually something that is valuable. It's part of the farming operation, and that you know, that's just as legitimate a sale and of a farming, you know, good and transaction as any other. And so I would actually put maybe a little broader interpretation on what is farming that might otherwise be regarded in this context as promotion.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Just a quick question for Representative Nelson. A stand to sell your products. What about the secondary farm products you would get? If you sell corn, then can you make cornbread and sell it? If you sell blueberries, then can you make jam and sell it?
It would be wonderful.
But this bill does not go there, correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith. At this time, it doesn't allow that.
This case,
well, but
there's a restriction.
Yeah, I'm just talking to the merits of the bill. But
I believe Ray just whispered in my ear that he thought that this bill actually does accomplish the allowance of what you just talked about.
Yes, it would.
There is a current prohibition against that, as we understand it.
Yeah, that's what I understand it to be, current prohibition. So we are okay with that.
Okay, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson. I'm concerned about a disconnect between what I heard your intention to be and the words I see on the page. And I'd like to see if we can square that up and maybe educate me, or perhaps we need to make sure that we clarify the language on the page. I concur with the discussion that's gone on so far about the challenges faced by farmers now, and particularly with shrinking opportunities for markets for their product. And I understand from your testimony that your intention is to help provide one way of resolving that. I also understood you to say that it's your intention to preserve exclusive farmland for exclusive farm use. As I read the words in your bill, and particularly the words that come out of your bill, I think it will actually have the opposite effect, unless we do something to assure that the objectives you say you're trying to achieve are clarified in the bill. Because as I read this bill, any landowner would be allowed to have a farm stand with no restrictions on the structure, size, or location, or any of those other aspects. You said we're not trying to do a Knott's Berry Farm, but I don't see anything here that would prevent not only a Knott's Berry Farm, but a Hollywood Video that also sold some crop. So can you address why, for example, you took out, it looks like you have the same language repeated in three different sections of ORS, why you took out the limitation of 25% of sales, no more than 25% of sales from the stand should be farm product. And yet didn't substitute an alternative description that ties it to the farming. What's to prevent someone from having a Hollywood Video or an arcade or a mall that has a little corner that sells some fresh peas, and then 95% of what they sell is just what you could sell in any mall? What's to prevent that? To keep our farmland in farm use.
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Nolan, and that's a very good question. And I think the very best answer can come from the farmers themselves. Their primary, you know, purpose on earth is to sell that crop. I mean, to preserve that land. I mean, if they don't sell the crop, everything's for naught. And, I mean, you can't, just like in this case, it's unfortunate that, you know, we have to use a rotation crop here because they can't sell wheat, can't sell, you know, anything else over the year they, you know, have produce. But I think it's up to the individual farmer, and I'm not going to preempt, you know, their creativity or, you know, how any of us would market our own private businesses. And I think, you know, once we start, you know, putting restrictions, but what we have asked that, you know, our purpose, you know, to sell farm, promote farm products is our primary purpose. And, you know, I can't preempt every farm on earth and know what creative idea they're going to come up with. So if there has to be some concern for that, well, so be it. But I don't think we restrict other businesses. I mean, Oregon Stationers, the wineries, all have, you know, basic opportunities. I mean, to sell gift items, to, you know, have a banquet, to have visitors come in. It ought to be similar. But maybe we need to word it just like the wine industry.
If I might follow up. So, Representative Nelson, if this bill passes and someone who is not currently a farmer goes and buys farmland and builds a structure that they call Barry Nolan's Farm Stand, and it is actually just a mall, what keeps them from doing that? What keeps that land in farm use?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nolan, I believe this bill does specifically talk, and maybe it could be a farming mall. That's kind of a great idea, but I believe it addresses the fact that it's farm product promotion.
Where does it say that?
Actually, I don't see that in the bill. However, I think Representative King has a thought about that very issue.
I don't have the bill here.
I'm wondering if where we see the word promotions, if we might consider.
Okay.
Representative King, your thoughts were?
Thank you.
Okay.
That. Representative Nelson, I'm wondering if something that might meet your objective and address the concerns represented by Representative Nolan, and I'm sure that we'll hear from some other parties, would be that if it was farming-related promotions, that would surely keep the roller coasters off of the farm and the super malls, off as well. But that it would, still give a lot of latitude for, a farmer, having creativity and keeping the atmosphere of the farm stand business, in the tone of the farming, theme.
Mr. Chair, Mr. King, Representative King, thank you for that input, and that does bring clarification. As I believe on page 3, line 6 defines this. The structures are designed and used for the sale of farm crops and livestock grown on farms in the local agricultural area, including the sale of retail incidental items.
If I might follow up, Mr. Chair.
Sure, Representative Nolan.
Therein is exactly my concern, Representative Nelson, because the bill strikes the requirement that the sales of incidental items can account for no more than 25% of the total sales. So by striking that language, I think we open up a huge loophole that would allow someone who's not part of the farming community to buy land in this area, put a couple of apples out on the counter for sale, and sell anything they want to, or put roller coasters or whatever else, as it is now. And I think that's not what you're intending to do. I think what you're trying to do is help farmers stay on their farms and keep that land in productive use. I agree with that objective. I'm concerned that this language, in fact, opens a hole that you could drive a Mack truck through that would end up whittling away at the supply of land and make it even more difficult for farmers to operate economically and profitably.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nolan, would it suffice your understanding of this if it said, including the sale of retail incidental items if not sold separate from the farm product? I was trying to give the example earlier of, to promote something of using the scale, and putting 10 pounds of corn on the scale, in promotion. We're getting creative as farmers to make something happen to sell. So, that scale could cost more than, the 10 pounds of corn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, when we're restricted to 25%, that, causes us a, great problem in promoting it. We might have baskets. Or some type of lawn figures, that are filled with tomatoes, or the packaging itself, or the gift item that goes with the farm produce could be worth more than 25% of, of the actual farm, produce. So that's if you could help me word that properly, I'd be delighted to work
with you on language, because I think we're in agreement on what it's trying to achieve, and I support
objective. We don't want it to farmland to become video sales, and we certainly don't
bingo.
Want to
mm-hmm. Or bingo parlors.
Well, a farm bingo. That's a good one.
Well, it might be a way to get rid of excess crops as bingo prizes.
Nelson, especially now since you can increase your top prize on bingo, I'd be delighted to try to work with you on language that.
On behalf of our farmers, so we would
do what you're
certainly
trying to
appreciate
do.
your helping making this right, and they'll certainly appreciate your support because, a fine individual such as this John Bernard, who are just the epitome of everything great and good and worked so hard, need to be rewarded. Thank you very much.
We have more questions of you.
Oh.
Representative Smith, Ackerman, and Krieger. So
okay.
Smith.
All right.
Does your question have to do with Representative Nelson? Why don't you go first while I'm trying to talk?
Okay, just some follow-up, Representative Nelson, on Representative Nolan's interpretation of this act. And I think I have a general sympathy for the over-restrictive uses of farm property. And I would favor your amendment if we can define some scope of it, and let me give you some ideas so we can try to get you to where you want to go.
Okay.
In dropping out the language structured for banquets, public gatherings, and public for public entertainment, I think there's some allowance for abuse there because you could turn a food, a stand into a concession, a restaurant, a place for banquets, other public gatherings, which would accommodate entertainment. And, I don't think that's very bad in a country setting. I have two very large commercial stands located to the north of my district. It's the only urban area or farm area I represent. And I happen to think it would be okay, to have banquets out there at a farm setting or have a food concession or have some form of public entertainment. But I wouldn't want to have a stadium built for a rodeo.
Exactly.
Okay. Or facilities built for a mini county fair.
Right.
Although it would be okay under some circumstances. So I think if we could define the scope of what the stand is and keep it in some reasonable approximation to what exists now, I would have no problem in encouraging some other incidental uses of the farmland or the farm structures which are pre-existing. There's no problem with that.
Thank you.
But I'm just afraid the way it's written that we could have large concessions, we could have stadium and public entertainment on public on exclusive farm use property, and I don't think that's as far as we want to go.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ackerman, thank you very much, and I certainly appreciate feed-in from you and all of the members.
Yeah, Representative Ackerman, you're absolutely correct. You have Thistledown and Lone Pine on River Road.
That's right.
Thistledown has never had any trouble, but Lone Pine has because they were offering rides, hay rides, and pumpkin patch rides, and they got in trouble over that because that was considered commercial activity.
I understand.
Oh,
that.
Dear.
It was kind of interesting. It's
ridiculous.
It is.
That aggravates the urban-rural split. There's really no reason for that.
No.
I just don't understand that. But I think that you're onto something here that would really integrate both urban and rural constituencies because Thistledown and Lone Pine depend upon urban customers like me to go out there and buy their products. So if I could spend part of an afternoon doing something else out there, it would be kind of fun.
Thank you.
Great comments, Representative Ackerman. Representative Smith.
Representative Nelson, maybe you can help me with this. There's something I've never understood. You have wineries in your district, and I have a few, just a couple small wineries. You see, you have a vineyard and you have a winery on the same EFU zone. You pick your grapes, and then you're able to process your grapes in your winery to make wine, and then you're able to sell the bottled product off that zoning. I don't understand why wineries, and then wineries also have a banquet facility where you can rent, and I could have a party, and then there's a few other trinkets you can buy, a T-shirt or a mug or a wine glass. So I don't understand why wineries, and that's why wineries are so profitable, I believe, why wineries are able to do this. And if I want to grow corn and I can't can my own corn on my place and sell it to whomever under my own product line, you see, that seems to me such a crazy, loony use in our farming, and with NAFTA and all this other business, I don't understand why we can't do that. Do you have any reasoning for that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, no, and that's, you know, one of our greatest concerns is that, you know, there is just a great discrepancy, and I'm very, very, very fond of our, you know, our wineries, and so proud of them. So I don't want in any way to take away from what they have, but for some reason, somebody, and I believe in land use, somehow we look the other way, or we've grown up over the century, and, you know, we changed. You know, our philosophy, or we needed an economy so bad that we put our money there because farms were going south. So I agree exactly with you that it is an enigma, and we need to work through it. I mean, it would be incredible to get home canned corn from the Menards.
Thank you.
Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, I have to kind of laugh at this conversation the last few minutes before it started. I was thinking about going to the National Tree Farm Convention about 3 years ago in Maine, and we had 400 and some tree farmers there, and they load us all on the bus, and we said, we're going to take you out to this farm outside one of the bigger towns there. It was north of Portland, Maine, but it was fairly rural, and we drove about a half an hour, and right out in the middle of nowhere, pretty flat, a lot of rock. Here's this beautiful farm. Come to find out, it's a family, three generations, 500 and some acres. They have a sit-down banquet room for over 500. They hold weddings every Christmas, 4th of July, Labor Day, Thanksgiving, every holiday. They have a special decor, color celebration. Thousands of kids come out to learn about a farm. It's a working farm. It's a show place. It's known all over the East Coast. They come clear from New York, kids in buses. It's how you would be able to make urban people, city people, understand where milk comes from. They have animals. They have hay rides. They got a working mill. It's cutting a small hand mill, you know, where they're cutting boards. It's the very thing we should be promoting. It doesn't hurt the environment. So what are we trying to protect? What are we protecting ourselves from? Who's a huge ghost that can come and gobble up all this land and all of a sudden it's gone? I think it'd be a great idea. We're just happy to see what Representative Ackerman's thoughts were. Common sense is where we need to go.
Great comments. Hearing nothing else, thank you, Representative Nelson. We appreciate you bringing forward a great idea. Chair would like to call Jim Wells, Oregon Family Farm Association. Been waiting patiently in the room, former state representative. Glad to see you here, Jim.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Jim Welsh, representing Oregon Family Farm Association. This is certainly a good bill, and I think Representative Nelson did a great job of expressing the concerns and desires, and it's interesting to listen to the questions from the committee. I think pretty well covered everything. I think it's a fear that that we see out there due to restrictive regulation over a period of time. A fear has developed that if we open any of this up, you know, that we're going to see more more building, more establishments on our open green space and farmland. If we were to able to keep this very closely related to farm, ranch, and food-related issues, which a farm or a ranch would want to do that, I am sure. They are thinking about something that would help them in marketing their products, maybe getting people to come and spend some money at their location, at their establishment. We see this as brought up for wineries, and those of us who visited those locations, we see the ability to sell incidentals related certainly in a lot of respects to the business. And a lot of these people would want to do this, but I think we may hear from the opposition to this bill stating that it's just going to be a bizarre development if we open a lot of this up out in the rural area. Well, I think farmers themselves are by nature pretty conservative people, and they're business people. And when you start thinking about spending a lot of extra money to promote or to market, you're going to think twice. You're going to sit down, you're going to run out your business plan, you're going to take some time to see how much, you know, your cost-benefit analysis is going to end up. And I just don't see that there's going to be a big change out there. There are going to be those, as we've seen down in our neck of the woods and other locations, the farm stands. That's what we're talking about in the ORS here, that it is farm stands that we're talking about. And it is, the language we see there is way too restrictive now. We'd like to be able to open that up, and I certainly support this bill in being able to do that. But I don't think that we have a lot to fear out there in any way, shape, or form. It's going to cost money to do this. And if we keep it farm-related very closely, and that's pretty broad anyway, I think it's a great opportunity for those to earn some more dollars. And a land use in this state compared to some others, and I just spent 6 days down in Texas, what they think of Oregon, I don't want to repeat here, because you can't do a lot of things on your property here compared to other states, and they really roll their eyes back in their head when you start talking about the restrictions we have and the ability to make some money on your property and do with it that you want to do and make a living. And this bill, I think, just rolls some things back, and maybe there's some amendments to that could help a little bit, but where it's headed is the right direction. We need to provide some opportunities for the farming community, ranching community. We certainly need to do that, and we support this.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Members, do we have questions? Hearing none, thank you, Jim. Appreciate your thoughts today. Bob Rindy, BLCD. Bob, welcome. It's our first opportunity to have you in front of us, I think, isn't it?
I believe so.
Good. So we get to beat up on you today. You're the designated BD.
I'm looking forward to it.
welcome, Bob.
Perhaps in the future. I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation Development. And I have some comments, I think, that are passing out to you now. I want to start off with an apology that Mr. Ron Eber, who is our farmland specialist and who you've probably seen around this building for a number of years on these issues, has a conflict, and he's in Corvallis on a panel on a Willamette Futures conference, so he can't deliver his comments here that he prepared in conjunction with Mr. Benner, our director. I'll do my best. I don't usually deal in the details of farmland, so if I can't answer your questions, I'll make sure that I get them back to Ron, and he can perhaps get you an answer right away.
Thank you, Bob.
And I also want to congratulate you. I think this committee has clearly got to the heart of the issues that we have identified. In fact, I think even further into the details than we've delved here. The first paragraph simply describes the bill as we see it, and I think we agree on what it does. In the second paragraph, we're essentially warning that the method by which you might want to prevent to create more opportunities for the farm stand and related activities, that the method that's been chosen by this bill, unfortunately, it simply removes restrictions and puts none back. And as you've had a good discussion on that, I'm not going to go into details, but I think we concur with that discussion, and that's what we've raised here. Finally, in his third paragraph, Mr. Eber notes that he would be happy to sit down and work with both the sponsors and other interest parties to see if we can reach some conclusion on this. I think it's unfortunate, but it's a matter of land use law. I worked for a number of years in local government at the zoning counter, and I know that there are many situations where you have a variety of parties who have an issue, and you get them together, and you reach a conclusion, and you all go off happy, and you think everything's fine. And then 3 years later, or 1 year later, or 5 years later, somebody's picking up what you did and saying, look how ridiculous the law is. And that happens not only at the local level, it happens at the state level. And in 1993, same issue before the legislature. And you all were, or your predecessors were here, and you were hearing about a terrible state of affairs in Yamhill County, where there was concerts happening every week, I guess, or certainly quite frequently drawing thousands and thousands of people onto farm roads in areas that weren't designated for that and weren't built for that. And because of those conflicts, all the parties got together and we're real happy, and we have a statute here that limits those activities. And today we're finding, I don't know whether those people don't know about this or whether those activities now would be more acceptable, but I think that's the problem we have here, is we all, I think, need to continually work on our land use statutes. And I applaud your understanding of that and willingness to do that, because we're never going to get it quite right. We think we have a solution today, and we need to adjust it. So we're going to be glad to sit down and do that. I think there's probably some ways to accommodate the activities that you described, Representative Nelson, and with some language that we think would not at the same time leave the statute wide open for some things that have been proposed in the past and have occurred in the past that many, many farmers would then come back to you and tell you that we have to do it all over again. So with that, I'll conclude and try to answer any questions you have.
Questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Mr. Rindy, thank you so much. I really appreciate it when, you know, our partners, you know, want to help. I mean, I genuinely do. And on behalf of these people, I just cannot tell you how refreshing it is to hear that kind of, you know, let's work together to make this happen. And I appreciate your realizing that what was, you know, maybe shouldn't have been, or times change. And I think we need to be ahead of, you know, ahead of some of those situations. And, you know, in transportation, we've not been ahead of the problem of, you know, poor infrastructure that's causing us to be economically depressed. So it's really key that in the areas where you can maybe make a living, if we give the people the right without the other problems they've got to face, like infrastructure and roads, it's really appreciated. And I might mention those concerts were fabulous. There were 4 weekends, and done by so-called Blosser, and fabulous. People got together, built spirit in our communities like you couldn't believe. I mean, were incredible opportunities for everybody to get outdoors, you know, look and see what farming's all about, become back a part of our, you know, our roots. And thank you for allowing those to happen.
Sure.
Mr. Rindy. You said that this removes restrictions and puts none back in.
That's the idea?
That's the whole idea. That's the problem with the DLCD, and it's not provided so much by statute, but administrative rule, and it's the administrative rule and what you folks are doing behind closed doors that has got this committee in such a tizzy on everything that we're passing out of here today. So I would suggest then, when you work with Representative Nelson, not only will this bill have to pass muster from Representative Nelson, but Representative Smith and Representative Krieger as well. Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
thank you, Representative. Please, Bob.
First of all, let's be clear. There is no administrative rule adopted behind closed doors. I have myself participated in administrative rules, and some of which have had 10 public hearings all around the state, all of which have at least one or two, many more than that. So I would try to make sure the record is correct in that regard. There are no administrative rules adopted behind closed doors.
So noted.
Secondly, perhaps I used the wrong words in stating this puts none back. I think that you have yourselves identified reasons why you might not want to have simply remove the words and not think about the sidebars on and the results of that. The usual way in land use, whether it's at the local level, whether it's at the state level, to regulate land is to think about the consequences, because if you don't, certainly you will find, as I stated earlier, you're going to be back here again, I'm afraid, and I don't think that we want to. I don't think we can avoid that, but I think we want to do our best to try to do a job here today that's going to last for a long time. And I'm afraid that if you simply remove the restrictions but don't think about whether that opens up
a whole lot of opportunities for things that none of us wanted to happen, that when those do happen, you will have to be back at this today. So I was simply advising you maybe to try to think about some of those things and have some restrictions.
Thank you, Bob. Representative Smith.
Can you answer my winery vineyard concern that I voiced to Representative Nelson earlier? Why are the vineyards and the wineries allowed secondary byproduct from the crops they grow, but whenever another farmer or another farm use wants to in this state, man, you guys come in and you smash them like you're stepping on an ass?
Chair, if I may, I was trying to think of the answer to that earlier, and I was not here involved in legislature, and I think it was about 3 or 4 sessions ago when we created that, when you, your predecessors, created that law. Again, I want to be clear, this is not an administrative rule of LCDC intended to squash anybody. This was a change to the statute that happened in much in the same circumstances as we have today, with the wine industry working together with a lot of interested parties to create opportunities for wineries. And I seem to recall that took a long time, but in the end there was broad agreement. I just don't recall that it was highly controversial at the end, but you might want to check that with Mr. Eber, who was involved in that. And I guess the answer is then I don't know that as part of that anybody was kind of looking at it that way as well, gee, why don't we at the same time try to open up the same opportunity for people who grow tomatoes and want to make ketchup or in all the rest of the things that you could do. I think it was focused, it was an effort to focus on to open the statute to make sure that there was good opportunities for wineries, and it may be time, as you're suggesting, to come back and ask those questions again. I'm just not a historian on exactly why we got there and how we did. I'm sure Mr. Eber would enjoy the opportunity to come back and reconnect.
Why don't you send him to my office?
Mm-hmm. Be glad to do that.
Okay.
Great. It is a little bit strange. We actually had a gentleman in the room a little while ago that has a very nice vineyard just up the road that we quite often, too, as legislators, go to for various functions, and they serve food there, and they have music, and it's a banquet facility, in addition to being a winery. I don't know if that's within the urban growth boundary where that's an allowed, permitted use. I can think of another one just outside of McMinnville. So I
beg your pardon?
No, excuse me, Independence. Eola Hills, I think it is. But that may be within the city limits or very close.
Chair Kropp, I'm not sure it is. I do know that the statute, as a result of this session that I was describing earlier, does provide a lot of opportunities for wineries to have the kind of activity that you're describing. And that was done carefully by the legislature, in one of these working groups that where lots of folks got together and met and wrote out all those words. I think there are probably reasons why some of those opportunities were there, and I can't help you in that. Again, I can make sure that Mr. Eber gets back to you if you wish individually or as a for the committee.
Okay, thank you. Representative King, you have a question.
Well, you brought up the one example of, a rock concert, and even though I know that some rock concerts have been held in Representative Krupp's district to promote some agricultural crops, I don't think that's...
And after the grass seed went broke.
That's the intention of this, bill to promote food stamps.
It's a different agricultural crop. It's called the hemp festival, and it is a somewhat controversial, but interesting moment in time. And of course, you understand that Mr. Rindy is a rock and roll musician and guitar player, so...
And I'm sure that he also is making sure that they, follow all the land use guidelines, as much as possible.
I can assure you that the Linn County Sheriff's Department is making sure that they're following all the guidelines.
Mr. Chair, I've never been to that festival, but I presume that only 25% of what they're selling in incidental items is keeping to the statute.
You might have to get Secretary of State to audit that.
Representative Nolan.
I wasn't finished, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. My apologies, Representative King. I'm just trying to move forward.
You want to get out of here? And certainly, if there's opportunities for other agricultural entities to do the vertical integration, effectively, like the wineries do, I think they should be you're entitled to that, and that that probably is a piece of work that's bigger than this bill.
Yeah.
And that I think that there may be some people in this room that might want to pursue that, and if we have some businesses that, you know, could take advantage of that, I think that you've heard some testimony today that helps maybe broaden the scope of what, you know, we should be treating as agricultural that hasn't been, you know, before. So I'd certainly like to see you, you know, your work, you know, further in terms of this. But I think that there's no intent in this bill to just say you can do anything anywhere. And so I think that, you know, LCDC, you know, needs some defense, you know, in terms of that, you know, that consideration. And so I think we are trying to look for some sideboards here that say, let's promote in a great way, but let's kind of keep it related to, you know, to the agricultural theme of things.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the winery exemption that we've talked about, are wineries allowed to operate bowling alleys?
Mr. Chair, I believe
bowling alleys?
I don't think they are.
In your reading of this bill, is there anything that would definitively preclude a bowling alley from being operated incidental to a farm stand?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I think that there is a lot of room in the language once this language is removed. There's a lot of room to be creative. I don't want to speculate as to whether you could build a bowling alley, but I think we've seen throughout the history of land use, I've worked at the local level where you see a lot more of this than you see it at the state. There are always very creative individuals in terms of the zoning ordinance, and it wouldn't surprise me if someone sooner or later came forward and tried to put a bowling alley in, and at least there would be a good long argument about it, and maybe it would go to court. And that's the kind of thing that I think we can prevent today, is even if it's not clearly going to happen, let's try to be as clear as we can, and at the least we'll prevent a lot of these kinds of cases from clogging up the courts.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
one question
quickly. I like that idea, because I was saying that Representative Nolan had, because we could have cucumbers for the bowling pins and use pumpkins for the ball. I mean, I don't know what you're saying, but I mean, you're really making me think. These are great things for my school kids. I never thought about this before until brought up like
this. Well, in that case, it would be permitted.
Okay, that's good. Or if we make moonshine, I guess corn, then in corn used for liquor on the farms, then it'd be okay, and then we could do everything the wineries would do. No, I'm getting off target.
We might be able to revive the chair's bill from an earlier public hearing.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, the truth is, I like the concept of buy in Oregon. I mean, if we need to put that in here, I mean, I think that's a great promotion. And having been a potato farmer and competing with Idaho potatoes, and I grew 32-ounce ones, my husband and I, versus their, I hate to say it, but at that time, really crummy potatoes. But, you know, when you go to the grocery stores and you're having to buy, it's just like beef, you know, buying, you know, hoof and mouth disease beef now from England. Who'd want that, you know? Good Lord. And so there's something about being able to buy Oregon products from farm stands, you know, that's healthy, it's good for Oregon, it's good for the farmers, it's good for the people, and it's fair, because, I mean, we're having to compete with, you know, surplus pricing. It made me sad to see what these kids were going through with Hungary, us importing from Hungary, and now, you know, beyond Mexico and other places, and just like our cattlemen are. So maybe, you know, that concept is a great one. You know, buy Oregon, you know, let's promote our own products. And I think that's probably one of the things I should have included and said, you know.
Chair Crawford,
yes.
Representative Nelson, I was in a meeting at the beginning of the session where I'm pretty sure that the Economic and Community Development Department, or perhaps it was the governor's office, was going to float a legislative concept to promote buy Oregon or Oregon products, and I'm sorry it was an item that I wasn't particularly involved in, so I don't know the details. But you might check back with somebody at EED. I think they have the same concept you just described. I know that they had described earlier in the session, and I don't know whether it just never made it into a bill or what happened to it.
Okay, members, we're going to have to move along. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3924, and thank you, Representative Nelson, for bringing it forward, and hope that very shortly you can have some additional wording there that satisfies members' concerns, and we can move the bill out. Members, we need to move out one more piece of legislation today, HGM 33. So we're going to open a public hearing and work session, HGM 33. Ray, would you tell us what this is about? And Cattlemen and Farm Bureau, come forward, please.
Yes, Mr.
And
Chair.
Whoever else.
Members of the committee, HGM 33 urges the Congress of the United States to enact legislation that requires country of origin labeling on all meat and meat products. Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Good idea.
Members, I will tell you that this is a piece of legislation we passed out to Congress last session as a resolution. I was the author of that, and it appears that we need to do it again to remind Congress that this is becoming a greater problem than we thought it was even 2 years ago. So that's what this is all about. Please.
Thank you,
for the record.
Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Glenn Stonebrink with the Oregon Cattlemen Association. I know you're capable of reading. You have my testimony. I'll be brief on one condition, and that is, if there's any opposition, I would like a chance for rebuttal. It should be an easy bill, and since the bill passed one session ago, by the way, 58-0, we do have the mad cow and hoof and mouth disease problem that have come about. It is more of a food safety issue now than ever before, and it's basically a consumer right to know, and I'll shut up and see if you have any questions. Thank you.
No questions, roll. Who's next? Jim.
I just want to state that I'm Jim Welsh, representing Oregon Family Farm Association, and we full-heartedly support this House Joint Memorial 33, and we just want to be on record to do that. A good bill should pass.
Thank you. Jean.
Huh. Jean Underhill-Wilkinson, Oregon Farm Bureau. Chairman Krupp, members of the committee, I wanted to join my friends here in supporting House Joint Memorial 33. It's a positive bill that concerns, as you heard from Glenn, concerns safety issues, consumer safety issues, as well as consumer choice. As you know, and those of you who weren't here last legislative session, there's really no way for our U.S. Meat producers to have a competitive advantage by advertising a U.S.-produced product to the consumers. Likewise, the consumers don't have any option, no way of knowing, and no way of choosing what they're buying. And some consumers nowadays with safety and quality issues would like to be able to choose a domestic-raised and produced meat product rather than a foreign one. And this would encourage Congress to go ahead and pass some legislation that would change the way the USDA operates so that we don't have foreign products coming in the United States being processed and having USDA inspection sticker put on those products, giving the misconception to the consumers that that is a U.S.-grown product when it is not. So this would be good for producers and consumers alike, and it would be a positive step if we could ever get it done. Thank you for hearing my testimony. Any questions?
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I just have one question. Why can't we get it done?
I just think it's ludicrous.
And good question.
And not to take a lot of your time, but in my testimony, that is one of the questions that I actually prepare on page 2, is to who's opposing this?
Exactly.
And what you'll find is, and I'll use a quick example, last two sessions of Congress ago, I'll tell you the group. It's the retailers, it's the meat packers and processors, it's the meat importers, and the big feedlot operators who make a lot of money off of importing meat. It's disguised virtually because you don't know the difference as U.S. meat. They make the huge profits off of that. They let it be known they had $30 million to use to stop country of origin meat labeling 2 years ago. Now we have mad cow disease, and we want people to know and where their meat comes from. It might be a little tougher job. They were in this building 2 years ago to stop just this simple memorial to Congress, big time. I notice they're not here tonight to stop this bill because they know the seriousness of this at the present time. But they make, just follow the money.
And I might add, members, if you look at Glenn's testimony on the second page, there are a number of countries that do require this right now, and there are also countries that have And we'll talk about this in our NAFTA and GATT hearing, but there are countries that put up lots of trade barriers to our beef going to them. And that's part of the leveling of the playing field that needs to be occurring with our trade representation when we sign these trade agreements. Additional questions? No questions? Thank you very much. We're going to close a public hearing on House or HJM 33. We're going to open a work session on HJM 33. The chair would entertain a motion.
So made.
Okay.
Everybody wants, please.
All right. Well, the motion has been made that we pass HJM 33 to the full House for consideration with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Hearing none. Any objection? Hearing none. So ordered. HJM 33 is passed to the full House with a due pass recommendation. Who's going to carry this bill? All right. Representative Smith has worked it out with Representative Nelson, and she's going to carry the bill. With that, members, thank you very much, and we are adjourned.
Well, you know, we didn't vote on 396.
Yeah.